horrified by the images of the aftermath of battle that their newspapers carried into their homes, thanks to the technology of photography that Alexander Gardner and Matthew Brady brought to the battlefield. Another shocking atrocity was prison camps for soldiers captured during battle. Sadly, nearly as many men died in Civil War prison camps as died in the Vietnam War. For a population that had been passionate and excited about war, Americans slowly came to the realization that what they thought would be almost a spectator sport was a vastly different animal altogether. Today, many Civil War battlefields are quiet, beautiful places of rolling hills covered with undulating grass and charming rail fences surrounding peaceful pastures. Many visitors to these historic sites are baffled as they try to reconcile the picturesque fields with memorial markers and monuments with the violent fighting, hand-to-hand combat, bayonets, and death that took place there 150 years ago. It's hard to comprehend that men marching in formation virtually walked up to the enemy in an open field and fired at almost point-blank range. If it sounds almost suicidal, it was close. The Civil War was the last war fought in that manner. Modern wars that came after have been fought differently, with automatic weapons, moving tanks, and fighter planes. This is the story of some of the Civil War's more dramatic battles, those that many people still know by name, which you can visit today, and which took place in a time when many men of all ages were willing to go to war to fight and die for a cause they believed in, whether it was the preservation of the Union or the right to secede and form a new nation of states with the right to self-govern, just as the plucky colonists had done 85 years before. Chapter 1. The Battle of First Bull Run, Manassas, Virginia, July 21, 1861. President Lincoln initially called for 75,000 volunteers to suppress the rebellious states, and the country responded. The recruits would serve a 90-day stint, which was naively considered to be a sufficient amount of time to end the problem with the southern states. General Irvin McDowell was put in charge of the untrained recruits, and camp was set up in Washington, D.C. McDowell, who warned Lincoln that training an inexperienced army would take time, began the unenviable task of teaching the green members of this new army how to be soldiers, a Herculean task, since he also needed to get them into battle and conquer the enemy all before the enlistment term expired. By July 1861, time was running out, and the pressure was on to fight, as the 90-day enlistment period would soon end and the men would return home. On July 18th, McDowell's men marched from Washington toward Centerville, Virginia. Citizens of Washington were excited about the battle they knew was soon to come, and the soldiers were in high spirits, eager to show the people of Washington their skills and the ease with which the enemy could be vanquished. It was generally assumed that the battle would take place on July 21st, a Sunday, which made it a perfect day for spectators to see the war begin and end on the same day. In addition, and more to the point, Lincoln's 90-day volunteers were about to complete their term of duty and head home. Everyone was in high spirits. The citizens of the capital city couldn't wait to see the rebels get what they had coming to them. Picnic baskets, opera glasses, and champagne were packed in more than a few of the fine carriages that set out that Sunday to watch the exciting event, and the spectator socialites were dressed in their Sunday best. In addition, a number of congressmen felt it was only their proper duty to be on the battlefield to congratulate the brave men on a job well done, once the secessionists had been taught a lesson and the uprising had been quelled. Rose O'Neill Greenhow, a well-to-do Washington socialite with Southern sympathies, and ultimately a renowned Confederate spy with connections to highly placed Northern legislators, had made troop movements in the nation's capital known to Confederate Brigadier General Pierre Gustave Tonton Beauregard. This was accomplished by sending a note written in cipher across enemy lines, safely concealed in the hair of a pretty 16-year-old Southern girl, Betty Duval, who shook it out of her long dark hair once she reached Beauregard's quarters. Rose sent a second message on July 16, 1861, to warn that the Union Army was on the march into Virginia. Greenhow was a valuable source of information to the Confederate forces. She was ultimately imprisoned at Old Capitol Prison in Washington City in 1862, along with her young daughter, Little Rose. Her visitors, many of whom were Washington officials and congressmen, continued to give her information, which she continued to funnel to the Confederacy. As officials in Washington didn't know exactly what to do with a female spy as a prisoner, Rose was eventually released after 5 months, with the understanding